For anyone that has traveled to Morocco, you'll understand a place of incredible colors and textures, where the modern is woven together with incredible ancient tradition. And in Morocco, it's in the markets where things really come to life. For those who have ventured into the souks, you'll know that shopping for a rug is one of the most rewarding experiences you can undertake, but in honesty, also one of the most frustrating when you can't find exactly what you want. And it's here where this week's guest started to dream about doing things a little bit differently, while working directly with local communities in bridging heritage and opportunity. You're listening to The Entrepreneurs with me, Daniel Page. Speaking of heritage, a bit later in the show, we'll head to Portugal to meet the brothers behind Portuguese Flannel, a refreshing modern label inspired by their family's four generations in the textile business. But first, it's off to Marrakesh. Robert Wright and Tiberio Lobo Navia are the co-founders of Benny Rugs. The Marrakesh-based label works closely with a community of Berber descendants to craft made-to-order rugs for their clients. The company has grown from an idea to a team of more than 30 people in just over 2 years, with the co-founders having recently started work on a brand new shop and studio, which will feature a cafe which pays tribute to their favorite Milanese outposts. Inspired by art, architecture, and the natural world, Benny Rugs allows you to create your perfect rug digitally, with the exact size, color, material, and pattern you want, while helping you to visualize every step of the process. Tiberio is an artist originally from Miami with a background in hospitality, while Robert, originally from New York City, is a former marketing director of footwear brand Saludos. The pair are now using their experience to inform this new journey. Here now is our conversation with the story of Benny Rugs.
It all started really with a trip to Morocco. Robert was here on a photo shoot. I had met him, and as one ends up doing when in Morocco, you end up shopping for rugs. And it's an enchanting process. You sit, you have tea, and you go through piles and piles and piles of rugs, ultimately finding something that you either love or you compromised on and taking it home. And really, it was when we got the rugs home and our friends were asking where we got them.
Right. And so we would send our friends basically the WhatsApp of this family in Morocco where we bought the rugs. And most of them would go back and forth for a while, but they wouldn't end up purchasing a rug in the end. And what we found when we talked to them was that they felt like they couldn't really find the size they needed for their space or the color combination that they loved or really a pattern that worked in more contemporary urban interiors. And, you know, traditionally Moroccan rugs have been made in very kind of random sizes in a way, in a long and narrow format that was meant for Moroccan homes. And so we started thinking at that point, it's such a shame because they're missing out on the magic of the experience. No one's telling them the story of how these are made. And also, no one has really reimagined the experience for today's consumer. And so we started to think, Tibbs and I, and talk a lot about, you know, if we kind of started from scratch and reimagine what it would be like to shop for a rug online, what would that look like? And I think that was really the first step.
And it was basically taking our experience in addressing the frustrations that we had, because at the end of the day, you really do end up compromising. And you find a rug that you love, but it's too small, or you see another one that you fall in love with and it's too big or too narrow or an odd shape. By the end of it, you want a rug, but you're not getting the one that you loved necessarily.
Right.
And so that's where I think the customization really came in for us. It's like designing these beautiful heritage quality rugs for a modern home.
That's fantastic. And for anyone that has been to Marrakesh or to Morocco, they'll know the incredible color and flavor of the place. And it's so fun to go out shopping. But at the same time, as you say, there are those issues of finding exactly what you're looking for, perhaps. I'm curious in how you went about finding partners locally, because I imagine people weren't super receptive to the idea at the beginning, but talk to me a little bit about that.
I think in the beginning, we heard no a lot, to be honest. And we heard, that's just not how things are done here. That's a crazy idea.
And we were like, well, indulge us. Let's try.
It took a lot of convincing in a way. And basically, I think, you know, that was really the bulk of the time in starting the company.
Yeah.
Was eventually we found a local partner here in Marrakesh who still plays a role today, and really working with him to find the right weaving partner. And it took about 2 or 2.5 years. We even had one situation where we thought we had landed on a production partner, we had produced all of our photo shoot samples. We had them drying. They were fully complete. And let's just say they disappeared under
mysterious circumstances.
Then we had to really start from scratch again. So yeah. It was a process.
We ended up getting very lucky. So it was a mixture of luck and persistence, really.
That is super interesting. I know that you work directly with the Berber community as well, which for people that have traveled to Morocco, they'll know about this incredible culture of people that come and really give this color and light to the markets there and really bring them to the life with the incredible handiworks and things there. Talk to me a little bit about the production and what that is like.
Well, right now our production is centered in the Middle Atlas. We work with one rather large cooperative there, and it's about 5 hours from Marrakesh. So at the beginning, we would visit maybe once a month, and that was enough to kind of check on things. And as volume picked up, we're out there weekly now checking to make sure that orders are being made and organizing the looms and the whole thing. But it's been incredible because we started with, I think, 10 looms and maybe 15 weavers. And at this point, we've got 90 looms,
90 more or looms less. And about 200 weavers who are weaving every day.
So yeah. It's been wonderful to kind of grow within the community and see these women who are always receptive to working with us and always giving us new ideas on how to organize and what designs work and what don't. So they're as much of the process as anyone else.
And I would say in terms of organization, we have about 12 different ateliers, and each one has about 20 to 25 weavers at each location. Mm-hmm. So it's somewhat decentralized, but what's been great is that in the most recent COVID-related environment, a lot of the tourist traffic to Marrakesh has obviously stopped. So some of these weaving ateliers have been struggling. They haven't had a ton of work. But as we've been expanding, we've been able to bring a lot more weavers onto the team. So it's been nice to be a part of the community in that way.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. You launched, I believe, in 2018, and it's been a pretty quick growth since then. I think your team is over 30 people now, and probably not all based where you are now. Robert, I know you recently relocated to Marrakesh. What drove your decision to make that move?
A few factors. I had been in New York for just about 13 years. Part of me was ready for a change in that sense. But also, the primary factor was the business was growing very quickly. I've always been in love with Marrakesh from the first time that I came here, which was in college. And I really wanted to be a part of the business on the ground. As you mentioned, a lot of our efforts now are focusing on growing our team here in Morocco and on opening a new studio space, which will house our team, weavers, and a showroom for clients all under one roof. And I really wanted to be here with Tiberio to work on all those pieces of the puzzle that are coming together. We're currently in construction mode for the future Binny studio. So I think to create really this physical embodiment of the brand, I think, you know, when we started searching for the building, we said to ourselves, if our website, which we put so much thought and energy into in the beginning, if our website became a building, you know, what would it look like? What would the different pages be of the building, so to speak? And I think to create that together while being in the same space, even though it involves some occasional arguments over paint colors and the such, has been really rewarding.
That's fascinating. I'm glad you brought up the studio because it is quite different to think about building bricks and mortar shop studio out of what already exists in a digital brand. Usually in past, it might have been the other way around. People will obviously be familiar with engaging these days with brands in many cases only online or only through digital channels. So talk to me a little bit about how you go about the continuity of storytelling and brand building when you now are trying to expand that.
So I think one of the really core tenets of the brand that Tiberio and I constantly come back to is the fact that we want Binny to really combine the best of ancient craft and preserving and respecting this heritage with modern design and technology. So we want to evolve the designs in terms of drawing in references from architecture and from art. And we also want to reimagine what shopping for a rug can be like online. So that's why on our website, you can basically pick a blank slate, a pattern or a design. You can change the background and the line color and the rug changes on screen. You can make any size you want. And so in creating the studio, we knew that we also wanted to reimagine what it would be like to shop for a rug physically. So instead of stacks and stacks of rugs and rugs hanging all over the walls, we wanted to display the blank slates and then basically have a wall, a customization wall, so to speak, where people can choose the height of their pile, their colors, their design, and really bring that experience that our customers have responded to so well digitally to a physical space. And then in addition to the showroom.
Well, but going back to that experience, to build on that a little bit, it's also keeping some of the physicality, because shopping for rugs, the kind of the old way, it's a very physical experience. You're like taking rugs out, you're putting them out. And we wanted to keep some of that charm. So it's still quite physical. You know, you're picking your rugs, you're grabbing samples and placing them next to colors and creating your own combination. So we still wanted to keep that aspect of it, but just kind of reimagine it. So it's kind of taking everything and giving it our own twist.
And talk to me about what the actual studio will be then. Will there be the opportunity to sort of, in the traditional way, sit down and have tea and look through rugs and build something that will suit your home or your office or your studio?
So we definitely will be serving tea. We've also designed a really great espresso bar inspired by a few of our favorite spots in Milan. So we're a bit more of a coffee drinking company than tea.
But we'll definitely have tea.
We'll definitely have tea. But really the building is a gym where, you know, we feel so lucky to have found it. It's shaped around a central courtyard like many buildings in Morocco are. And at the center of the building is a 200-year-old olive tree that we found. And basically around this central courtyard, you'll have the showroom, you'll have our offices. And really most importantly, in the heart of the building is going to be 50 looms with weavers creating customers' designs. So not only can you come have a cup of tea or espresso, design your rug, but you can then walk around and see the weavers creating rugs and really see the process.
And see, yeah, and see the whole process. Yeah. So the idea really isn't for people to come and browse rugs in a traditional sense, because we want people to come and design their rug and experience what it's like to receive the rug that you created or you conceived on this trip to Marrakesh when you get home. And we think that's such an important part of our brand. And so we don't want it to be a traditional retail experience where you walk out the door with the thing that you purchased. It's still about having the rug made for you.
How much then are you thinking going forward about the continuity of sort of building that digital experience as well? As we've said, it's a bit of a different experience to be in a place and experience a brand with those physical touch points like a studio you are building. But what's the sort of vision for the digital side of things?
So that's a great question. We really want to keep evolving the digital experience as well, because that's always been in our mind what has made us different. So from the beginning, we knew that we wanted really beautiful, immersive content, and pretty much all of the content that we put onto our website, we want to give creative license to our partners, whether they be in photography or video or in styling, and really make sure that we're creating art in a way with these beautiful objects that take so long to make. So we definitely want to keep our focus there on beautiful content for the site, but we also do have a few tricks up our sleeve that we're working on now in terms of thinking about the question of, buying a rug is a pretty significant investment. It's hard to do it just from photos and even from swatches, which you can request via our site. So we're starting to think down the line of how can we use augmented reality or virtual reality and allow consumers to see these rugs in their home before they click the purchase button.
I just wanted to ask about both of your backgrounds, actually, and how that is being engaged, let's say, in this new venture. Tiberio, you already talked about being an artist and being involved in hospitality. Perhaps first to you, how inspiring is this to sort of help people create these wonderful pieces of work, which they're able to customize and change the colors? Just looking through the catalog and what has been produced, there are some incredible works there. So how does that work for you as now a business person, but also an artist?
I think it's incredibly inspiring to see what kind of triggers people's imaginations and the risks that they are either willing or not unwilling to take with their rug purchase. The process of building the brand, designing the rugs, now designing the studio has been incredibly enriching and fulfilling. And I'm constantly engaged and excited to work on Benny, because there's always something to create. There's always something to do, a new problem to solve.
And Tiberio is really our in-house designer of most of the design. So a lot of design sketches and paintings that he's been creating for years have now found their way onto rugs. And people are able to take that framework or that structure of a painting or a sketch of his and change it with their colors and their sizing and the scale, obviously. But sorry to put words in your mouth. I think it's been great for you to see your paintings come to life in a way in a different medium.
It has. And I guess for me, it's still a bit surreal to think about it. It doesn't always register as reality.
And Robert, I know your background is more in marketing and storytelling, brand. So talk to me about how this engages you in creating something to showcase to the world, to consumers, to people in an artistic space, in retail, and in quite a lot of things, homewares. How's that been for you?
It's been amazing. I had the good luck to work for an amazing brand called Saludos, which is an espadrille brand based in Soho. And I started there with the founder, Nick Brown, when the company was really small and stayed for quite a while. So I really got to see how a company and a brand grew and how the little decisions that you make early on become much larger over time and really have ripple effects across the business. So for me to then step out and create Binny with Tibbs, it's just been a dream come true to have our own business and to be able to have those creative decisions and to create beautiful content and experiences. And I think for me, it all boils down to storytelling, and I always want everything we do to tell the story of this craft and also to tell the story in a way of a bit of a reaction against instant gratification and mass production, and to really celebrate the beauty of imperfection and the idiosyncrasies that are in these rugs. Someone once described Morocco to us as a place where following a linear pattern, it doesn't exist here. Everything is a bit of a zigzag. And even in our rug designs, no line is ever perfectly straight. No design is ever the same as the one that came before it. So for me to tell that story and to celebrate that and to have people willing to wait 10 to 14 weeks for their rug to arrive is a success to me. I love that part of it.
And then just to tack on to that, and now that we're creating the studio, I think creating an experience for people also kind of brings me back to my days in hospitality, which is, it's always wonderful to see someone's eyes light up when they see something new or experience something new. So really building that physical manifestation of the brand in our next phase is also going to be incredibly exciting and fulfilling.
Very well said. Just lastly, perhaps to either of you gents and to both, I would be remiss not to ask you about just the atmosphere in Marrakesh, obviously a little bit different right now, but that will change hopefully going forward. We at Monocle are obviously huge fans of Marrakesh. What's it like to be expat business owners there, and what's sort of the energy like for starting a new business?
I think it's incredibly a fertile ground for new businesses. The expat scene is growing and it's full of people from all over the world with really original ideas, you know, everyone from restaurateurs to clothing designers to artists. And I think what's really beautiful is that everyone supports each other. It's a very tight-knit community. And while it's growing, it's still quite small. We feel really fortunate to have met this group of creatives here that inspire us, and that I forgot to mention, we're also including a lot of the brands of these creatives into the studio space. So some friends of ours who are expats here have a beautiful concrete tile company that's all produced locally. Other friends own Marakshi Life, which is a beautiful clothing company here, and they'll be supplying the uniforms for the weavers and our team that's working in the studio. So we really want to integrate as much of this local community into the space as possible.
Going back to what it's like to start a business here in Marrakesh, what I think is wonderful, if you have any creative bone in your body and you have an idea, the hurdles to getting a proof of concept, to making your first sample, are really low here. You can go out and say you want to make anything, basically, and you can go out, find the artisans, work with them closely, and get that first sample.
No, whether it's leather or ceramics, you can have an idea to execution and a physical product in your hand within a few days.
So yeah, depending on what it is, and then you can scale it up and ship it and put up your website and get something going. So it's really exciting to see and speak to people who've just arrived and their ideas and what their experiences are. And at least I always try to help out the newcomers to make the growing pains a little more bearable.
Gentlemen, this has been fascinating. It's very wonderful to connect with you, and thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much. We appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Tiberio Lobo-Navia and Robert Wright, the co-founders of Benny Rugs, speaking to me from Marrakesh. You can learn more about the label at benirugs.com. Next up, we're off to Porto to meet the brothers Antonio and Manuel Maguiens, the founders of menswear label Portuguese Flannel. The untimely death of their father when the pair were young saw the family's textile factory change hands, with the two growing up with little contact with the sector. But in 2013, as Portugal emerged from the financial crisis, the brothers followed their instincts and decided to try their hand at making shirts. With little experience in fashion, the duo drew inspiration from the family's past, as they created unique patterns for their cotton, linen, and flannel clothing. Today, they're known for their bright, breezy shirts, linen trousers, and workwear-inspired overshirts, which you can browse at their flagship Porto store. Monocle correspondent Ivan Carvalho sat down with Antonio to hear the brand's story.
Me and my brother Manuel, our origins are related to textile. Our family has been in textile since the late 20s. It all started with my great-grandfather, João Magalhães, who was a son of very humble people that lived in Moreira de Cónegos, a small village near Guimarães. So his first job was in one of the biggest textile companies, maybe from Portugal. The owners saw on him a few characteristics that year after year, they started to give him more decision power. And I don't know how, I don't know where. I think I relate this with the Great Depression, because it was in the 1929 that he bought that company, KUKA. So it was his big first move in the textile world to make a new modern mill, a very new high-tech modern mill. He went to Germany to buy the machinery, Germany and England, and he did a new, totally new brand mill. It's called Textil Vizela. My father started working Textil Vizela. That was on the 70s. He received a lot of clients, okay? Mainly Americans and some English. And he became kind of friend of them, so sometimes when they came to Portugal, they stayed at our place. So all of this talk about textiles, about fabrics, about clothing, some of them were like owners of nice brands, people that were doing really nice and cool clothing brands. So all these conversations about textile, about design, about lifestyle, since I was like, I don't know, maybe 5 or 6, I remember having those clients, having dinner there, and it was very, very interesting conversations. So my childhood, and me and my brother, we travel a lot. We talk with very, very interesting people. Unconsciously, I think we absorb all that and put it now on Portuguese Flannel, on our brand. Unfortunately, my father died in 1990, and my great-grandfather decided to sell all his shares to part of the family. So his brothers bought the shares of the textile group to my grandfather. I was 10, my brother was 8, and we didn't have any kind of things to say. We were small children, and our grandfather decided what to do. So we start doing other stuff. We went to college, but as I always say many times, if you have something in your mind, if you have something inside, if you have, you know, I think people born with some kind of intuition for something or some kind of, I don't know. I only know that I always liked clothing. That was my thing. If I went to visit a city, I spend most of the days looking stores, clothing stores. So it was something that really, really never left us. So in 2013, me and my brother, we had a talk. We said we should do something related to textile. That's what we like. I think it's the time, and I think we have more kind of a natural inclination to the final product, you know, to the things having some kind of your own design. If you are like a manufacturer, you can't put that, you know, you are working for other people that are doing the design for you. So we didn't want that. So the way was to do a brand. And a brand back then and still today for Portuguese people, it's not an easy thing. We never did any kind of focus groups, any kind of marketing studies or that kind of related. We did like a collection that we like it. We did it ourselves. We didn't have money to contract a professional designer. So let's do something that we like. So the first collection, we only did shirts. We did 42 shirts. And there was not a specific criteria or design criteria to only do shirts. We knew that we had the people, the connections that did really good shirts. We knew the mills that did really good fabrics for shirts. And we said, okay, we're going to launch it, but we're going to launch it the best shirts around, you know? Our influences, of course, go back in time. For example, I can give you an example. Last summer season, my father had a really nice polo shirt. My mother said that he bought in Italy, kind of a retro 70s shirt inspired. So we did kind of a copy and we launched it. It was a huge success. We go to the past, do things in the present and hope that they have some impact in the future. Patterns, essentially on the flannel ones, the shacks, you know, the plates. We have access to a few archives that go back to 1930s. At the moment, and in the last collections, we go there to get some inspiration too. And sometimes we see a pattern from 1942 and we change it a little bit. For us as a brand, especially for the beginning, it was really important to have that legacy, you know, to have access to an archive that was in the family since 1930s. And if I compare the values that we were selling the first collection till the ones we are selling now, it's a huge difference, okay? And we didn't aim to reach this dimension we reach now. We were fine selling those, like, really small numbers. Each season, we are into new stores. Each season, we are selling a bit more. We are happy only to do things better. We really make some great, great connections with people that own small stores that were our clients for a long time. I think 99% of our retailers are small business independent stores. We never were really money orientated. Like, we always did things because we like it, because we knew that we were selling something with quality. I think people should buy quality and should buy it for a fair price. The design is really important, the quality is really important, and the price also is really important. And I think we can give people those three things, you know, like in a fair way.
Antonio Magalhães, co-founder of Portuguese Flannel, speaking there to Monocle's Ivan Carvalho. You can learn more about the brand at PortugueseFlannel.com. That's all for this week. My thanks to Christy Evans, who mixed and edited this show. And before we go, we're pleased to announce a new mini-series running alongside The Entrepreneurs every week for 5 episodes. Eureka will be taking a short break, and in its place, every Friday, you can listen to a brand new episode of The Spirit Lives On, a collaboration with our sponsor, Longines, about fearless aviators like Amelia Earhart, Eleanor Smith, and Wiley Post, whose thirst for adventure was pivotal in developing air travel into what it is today. I'm Daniel Bache. Thank you so much for listening and goodbye.
The Entrepreneurs on Monocle 24 is brought to you in association with Longines. As part of this unique partnership, Longines bring you an exciting new show, The Spirit Lives On. The early 20th century was an era in which legendary aviators soared to new heights, performed daring stunts, and tested the limits of air travel. They helped propel the development of aviation, powering its transformation into the innovative industry we recognize today.
It was such a wonderful age to fly through. I was privileged to know all those gallant pilots, both men and women, and gifted designers.
Fearless pilots like Amelia Earhart, Wiley Post, and Eleanor Smith were willing to put their own lives on the line to quench their thirst for adventure. In The Spirit Lives On, we tell the stories of these people who dared to live out their dreams in the air.
I flew the Atlantic because I wanted to. If that be what they call a woman's reason, make the most of it.
You can find the latest episode of The Spirit Lives On every Friday. Search for The Entrepreneurs on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or at monocle.com to download or subscribe now. Longines, The Spirit Lives On.